This podcast is brought to you by Intrepid Travel, the global leaders in sustainable small group travel experiences. If you're ready to feed your curiosity with real-life experiences, Intrepid has got the perfect adventure just for you. Visit intrepidtravel.com to book your next trip today.
It's one of the world's most popular destinations, a country we've all been to or are planning to visit just as soon as we can. It's a place of atmospheric cities and antique hill towns, of sun-drenched islands and olive orchards that spread as far as the eye can see. It's a country where there is always another ancient ruin or Baroque church to discover, a place that is home to some of the world's greatest masterpieces of art and architecture, not to mention some of the best food and wine around. It is, of course, Italy, a country that, if tourism were a boxing match, would win in a knockout every single time.
Mesdames et messieurs, départ de votre star est imminent. Attention à notre place.
Hello, and welcome to Flight of Fancy, the traveller.com.au podcast. I'm Uta Juncker, sitting in for Ben Groundwater, as we sing the praises of all things Italian. Joining the chorus are two travellers who are addicted to Italy. Sue Williams is a traveller, writer and columnist who once hitchhiked her way right around Sicily. Thanks for coming along, Sue.
Pleasure.
Also joining us is Intrepid Travel's Tara Harrison, the former editor of Travel Weekly. Hi, Tara.
Hi.
So, Sue, if you could be anywhere in Italy right now, where would you be?
Oh, that's a tough one. But I think, all things considered, I think I'd be in Florence. I just always remember walking once over the Ponte di Vecchio Bridge, if I said that right, looking down over the river, and it was just such a beautiful evening because I think the quality of light is just so fabulous in Florence and probably the rest of Italy as well. And eating an ice cream and thinking, this is the most perfect place on earth. And I've never kind of quite recovered from that, really. Whenever I think of Italy, I always think of Florence and that really magical moment, because I think travel is often made up of those little moments that really strike you at the time. So that's my choice.
Absolutely. Tara, where's your magical moment been?
I think it has to be Rome, which can be quite touristy, but it just depends how you tackle it. The last time I went, I stayed in a region called Monte.
Oh, I love Monte.
Yes. Which is really a local suburb in the heart of Rome. Which
so
is
it's
a total
very
surprise.
Central. It's tucked in behind the Colosseum.
It is, yeah. And I just remember walking the streets for hours and driving myself to a point of hangriness because I refused to go into any restaurant that had English on the menu. You have to eat where the locals eat. And I just remember having delicious, you know, truffle pasta and carbonara and exploring churches all around the city. And yeah, so Rome was my favourite magic moment.
It's, you can pick almost any Italian city and you can have a real voyage of discovery there, can't you? Even in somewhere like Venice, which is so popular, but you can still, you don't have to go too far off the beaten track and you find a part of town that is virtually tourist-free, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And it is really important to just go those few streets back. I think tourists will always want the view where you're in the big square or overlooking the Grand Canal. But if you go a few streets back, you can find the local corner. Admittedly, it is harder in Venice because it is really built around tourism, but they do exist and they have a great tradition there of cicchetti bars, which serve the happy hour snacks. So you order a drink, an Aperol spritz, and you get a side of, you know, buffalo mozzarella or, yeah.
And it's really easy to lose yourself, I think, in those little winding streets and around those little back streets of Venice. It's just absolutely amazing. Exactly. And you can actually not see another tourist for a good 10 minutes, which is a bonus, really. Yeah.
Which is pretty good going by Venice standards.
Yeah.
And then there are some of the less visited cities as well. I think, Sue, you like me, are a fan of Naples, aren't you?
Yes, absolutely. I really like Naples. I like the chaos of it. I like the colour, the madness. The traffic is so noisy, but it's kind of fun, really. You kind of really get off on how exciting the whole place is. And the locals are really, I think they're kind of different in Naples as well. They're really energetic and they're really voluble and they're really kind of over the top excitable, I think, as well. So Naples is a great city too, I think.
The first time I went to Naples, a friend took me. He lives in Rome. And he said, we went on a day trip. And he said, okay, before we go to Naples, I just have to show you this clip. And it was something he'd found on YouTube. And it was obvious someone had just been looking out their window and went, this is great, grabbed a phone and started filming. So really narrow street, which cars were allowed to park in. And then somehow a car was trying to get out, managed to block the street. There's traffic coming from both sides. There's people yelling. I mean, it sounds like they're really angry, but they were probably yelling advice. You know, there's people leaning out the window, there's cars, there's crowds, then a religious procession comes along with a priest and nuns and swinging incense, and it's just chaos, and it goes for 10 minutes, and in the end, the poor driver, who is just sweating and panicky, finally manages to get the car out, and then it's a party. Everyone's happy. And that's the thing about Italy, isn't it? There are so many great places to go and see, but it's also a vibe.
Yeah, definitely. It's a very passionate, chaotic place. I feel like the way they park their cars is literally by just reversing and hitting the bumper in front and the bumper behind, and they just don't care. It's skew if it's every which way, and that adds to the charm. And yes, you can't tell the shopkeepers, the restaurateurs, they'll be speaking and it sounds as if someone's cheated the other, but in fact they're probably just robustly conversing about the football. It's just very dramatic.
And it's wonderful going to see the football in Italy as well. You can go there and get really good coffee. You can get really fabulous food. It's nothing like pies and chips and stuff like that. It's actually really good quality gourmet food. Oh, and there's often an Australian playing in the football matches as well, which is really good because lots of Australians in the off-season here go over and play for Italian clubs.
Mm. Okay. And do people in that true Italian manner, do they dress up to go to the football so they're all looking chic?
They certainly don't wear tracksuits and other boots. No. But they don't look too bad at all. They don't actually wear suits. But they wear kind of nice clothes and they behave very nicely, you know, with nice manners, and they're very polite. And when they heard me shouting for an Australian footballer who was playing for Fiorentina, I think, they said, ah, Australian. And they started shouting for him as well. So it was kind of nice. I mean, admittedly, he was on their team, so it wasn't too much of a go. But, yeah, it was kind of fun to be part of that whole thing. It was great.
Nice. There is this sense in Italy that life happens on the streets, which makes it really easy as a tourist to feel part of where you are. And it's, you know, the passeggiata in the evening is one of my favourites. It's when everyone is out for a stroll and they're dressed up and half the people are sitting in cafes watching the other half as they walk up and down. Do you have any other favourite sort of Italian rituals?
I think drinking wine, sitting out over a sunset. Yes. And it just, I don't know, it's just the way the evening falls in Italy. It's such a long evening and people are just very happy to be out and wandering around or sitting in bars just drinking on the street and stuff. And it's kind of really nice and civilized and just a really pleasant thing.
Yeah, I'd agree. It's that time of dusk where everyone's going to the bars. And, yeah, if you find a local place that is doing the aperitivo, then that's perfect. There's a beautiful place in Rome called Bar San Callisto with just Peroni branded old vintage tables, and they serve only beer and it's only locals, and you just look out and watch the world go by. Mm.
Yeah. And lots of slow food restaurants as well where you have maybe three generations of one family all working in the same restaurant. You know, maybe the grandmother and the grandfather are actually cooking, the parents are actually bringing out the food, and the kids are kind of helping them as well. And that's a really lovely thing, and that can take, you know, it can take a while, but it's just absolutely glorious food and a fantastic family atmosphere. And I think Italy is superb for that. You don't find that in so many other places around the world.
And in that same way too, that when people are out in the evening, it's the whole family's there and it just becomes loud and boisterous and the kids are running around.
But and the dogs overtired. As well.
The dogs.
Yeah.
So we've talked about restaurants. Let's talk about food, because to me, food and wine is one of the great joys of Italy. But I've heard people say, oh, I don't like Italy, the food's bad. And I just think, what are these people doing wrong? Tara, do you have a theory?
Yes, they're going to the tourist places with the menus in English. Yeah, you have to avoid that. Definitely avoid the tourist traps. It's just knowing locals and asking their favourite places to eat, or just exploring and going off the energy of the atmosphere of the restaurant when you walk past. And yeah, being an Italian is a good sign.
Absolutely. I've been to the Venice Film Festival a few times and stayed on the Lido. And the Lido is kind of tourism central. And all the restaurants there, I've never found a really great restaurant, never had a good meal there really. Mm. And it's just purely because they're catering to tourists and they're kind of trying to make, you know, pasta as all those tourists know it rather than actually as it comes from them and their kind of the way that they would make it. So I'm quite with Tara on that. Really try and go to those little places. It might be hard because the menu will all be in Italian, but they'll always be able to explain to you as well.
So Sue, do you have any favourite meals you remember that you've just sort of sat there for an afternoon and had an amazing experience?
Yeah, the one in Siena always stays with me with the slow food movement, the family cooking. And we had, you know, five courses. We had pasta, we had soup, we had, oh, it was just absolutely divine. And it started, the meal started about 5 and we finished about midnight. And it was just absolutely lovely. And it was kind of, this is when I'd rented a villa in Tuscany. And I kind of have to thank, I owe Italy a debt of gratitude, really, because I was living in Australia. My family were all living in Britain. And I brought them over to Tuscany. We all met there at this villa. And they fell in love with it so much. They'd never been to Italy before either. And I managed to convince them to migrate to Australia. So now all my family are in Australia. And I think it's kind of because of the magic of Italy that that actually kind of persuaded them to come over and live here. And so I'm very lucky that I have my family here as well now.
Oh,
my husband maybe isn't quite so grateful. But, yeah, it was probably all to do with the magic of that meal and that evening and the Italian lifestyle and being able to sit around as a family and talk about our lives.
And you were sitting there going, and Australia's just like this.
Yes, exactly.
One of my favourite things in Italy is I'm a bit of a gelato tragic. And I love that in Italy, it's always cheap, it always tastes great, and there's always more flavours. In Tuscany, you get like lavender and violet. I was just in Naples recently and I was all over the pomegranate.
Oh,
you know? And everyone in Rome, there's a thing, and I've learned over the years, when a Roman asks you, so where's your favourite gelato place? Be very, very careful. Because it's a bit like football in Melbourne. It's like if you say the wrong one, you'll never live it down. Are there any other favourite culinary delights that you guys have?
Oh, well, on the subject of gelato, yeah, it's always fresh and seasonal. So my favourite combination is doing a nut and fruit combination,
oh,
a hazelnut and melon or whatever's seasonal and fresh at the time.
And the hazelnut is always so rich in Italy. It's got this creaminess, like, you know, it's actually made with nuts.
Exactly, yeah.
And it always looks so good too. It's always really beautifully presented. Sometimes they do those little tiny cones with ice cream or gelato sort of flowing over the sides, and it just looks so exquisite.
Mm.
And it's only kind of like a small bite-sized piece, but it's just wonderful. And you can have them 3 times a day then and not put
sweetie,
on a speck
3,
of weight.
5. And it's, I think you've touched on something there, Sue, that it's this Italian way of turning everything, even even an ice cream, into an occasion, and which can sometimes be frustrating. When I was in Florence last time, my friend and I liked iced coffee in the morning, and you know, we placed the order of how we like it, and one of the waiters, who was of course an Italian man, was like, I think I can do it better. And I was like, you know what, we actually like it this way. And it became, we were there 3 mornings. And every morning, each of us would get 2 iced coffees, one of which had been made by the female server who made it the way we liked it. And every day, that Italian male waiter would try and beat her and go, I think this one's better. It was just like death by iced coffee.
Yeah, because I think it's hard for us Australians in Italy with the coffee as well, because you can only get cappuccino in the mornings. Lots of Australians complain it's never hot enough, whereas, you know, it's always served lukewarm in Italy, really.
And it's milkier than we're often used to as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just a matter of they do things a particular way, and just know that if you're going to order a cappuccino after 11 a.m., they're going to think a little bit less of you.
Yes, just prepare to be shamed.
Well, and it makes sense because it is a milky, lukewarm drink. It's a morning drink. And I think the other one that confuses a lot of people when they order it is pizza, because how you get pizza served in Italy is also quite different, right?
Absolutely. And the pizza is, and I mean, I guess you don't get beetroot on it or pineapple. So, that's the biggest change, I think, really. But yeah, the pizza is absolutely delicious in Italy. And it's always sad leaving Italy and coming back home, although we've got some fantastic pizza places in Sydney and Melbourne these days. So,
But they're Australian pizza. They're not Italian
pizza.
They are.
Yeah. It's all about the dough, really, isn't it? Yeah.
You don't need to worry
about the toppings.
Yeah, no, you don't have 15 toppings on there.
Yeah,
it's quite spare.
Mm-hmm. But good quality ingredients make all the difference. And it's so thin that, you know, you don't put on any weight.
And I love it. Where do you guys stand on Italian breakfast, which is more your sort of cold cuts and your chunks of parmesan, which I get some people may not like for breakfast, but I'm like, bring it on. Give me some beautiful fresh tomatoes and some chunks of parmesan and I'm there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do like the coffee culture of stand-up bars. My breakfast in Italy is generally a black coffee, which is probably a faux pas before 11 a.m. as well. Then that justifies the rest of the day of eating. I'm happy to skip breakfast.
You've shocked your system.
Yeah, exactly.
And the bread's always good as well. That's always a real bonus too. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, they're thorough, aren't they? It's like everything you're served will be an excellent example of its type.
Mm. Yeah.
Get ready to fall in love with Italy on a trip with Intrepid Travel. With 28 distinct small group adventures, you can see Italy any way you want. From discovering hidden trattorias in the back streets with your local leader, to cruising around Venice, cycling in Tuscany, or visiting olive groves on the Amalfi, there's an adventure for everyone. Regardless of where you go, Italy will show you la dolce vita. Start planning your next getaway by visiting intrepidtravel.com/Italy.
Let's talk about some of our other favourite places in Italy. Sue, I know you're a big fan of Sicily.
Yes, I do like Sicily. I had a difficult time the first time I went there. It was a few years ago and I was hitchhiking around the island. As I came out of Palermo, I was picked up by a really fabulous car and I thought, oh, wow, this is lucky. This is great. And they opened the door and it was three guys in suits in there. And I thought, oh, I'm not so sure I want to be in this car. But I'd already kind of committed myself. So I kind of stepped in and put my rucksack in the boot and got in and we started going. And they were quite chatty and quite friendly and spoke quite good English. But after about 5 minutes, suddenly all these police cars came and screeched to a halt all around us. And they all kind of went white and I thought, oh, my goodness, what is this? And it turned out that the police had been watching the group and suspected them of drug smuggling.
Wow.
So they ordered us all out at gunpoint, all these men in black suits and me, the little hitchhiker. And they started pulling the car apart and they took everything apart. They took the hubcaps off. They slashed the upholstery inside the car. They kind of turned the place upside down. And there was I saying, look, I've only just got in this car. I don't know these men.
They're not my friends.
Yeah, that's right. I have nothing to do with this. And happily, the police believed me and let me go. So I never knew what happened to those guys. But yes, it was an unfortunate beginning. But after that, I didn't hitchhike again in Sicily. But I do find it an absolutely beautiful place. It's very different from the rest of Italy, I think. It's just quite wild and remote and kind of, I don't know, it's just a lot less green and lush. But it's just really beautiful. I really like it.
And it's got, what I love about Sicily is it's got quite a particular history and you can pick up the traces of that history. So it's not just that, as well as Roman ruins, they've got Greek ruins and they've got Islamic ruins, but it's in the food. You still get those Islamic tastes. They've got couscous and they've got apricots and they've got pistachios and they've got pomegranate juice. You go in Palermo, that's what you go and buy on the street. Mm. You refresh yourself with a quick glass of pomegranate juice. And the architecture in parts is really Islamic as well and sort of, you know, narrow streets and these quite elaborate wrought buildings. And the feel is really quite different to any other part of Italy, right?
Absolutely. You could be in lots of different parts of the world, really. You know, you kind of look around and think, well, I could be in sort of an Arabic place. You could be in Zanzibar in Tanzania. You could be lots of different places.
Yeah.
And there's lots of donkeys everywhere, which always kind of reminds me of the Middle East or Africa, like Ethiopia or somewhere. Mm. And it's an amazing, beautiful blend of cultures. And sometimes you think there are some cultures that should never blend together, that just won't work. But it really does work there, I think. It really is beautiful.
Mm. And what about, I'm going to toss this to you, Sue, because you've mentioned Sicily and you've mentioned Naples, and some listeners might be going, oh, I don't know if they sound particularly safe, particularly not if you're getting in cars with drug runners. But did you feel safe when you were travelling around there?
Yes, I did. I think the first time I went to Italy, I was just about 18 years old. And back then it was kind of more difficult, I think, for young women travelling alone. And you were harassed a little bit by guys. But I think the situation has really changed. That was a long time ago now, sadly. for me.
Oh, see, okay. I thought the change was just me getting older, because I remember that sort of reaction as well.
But no, absolutely. It's very different for me now because, you know, I'm an older woman. That's fine. But I think the men are very, very different. And they're kind of used to tourists now, and they don't kind of think that, you know, we're easy game or, you know, people to be preyed on at any point. I think the whole situation is a lot more sophisticated, a lot kinder, a lot more understanding. So the first time I went, you know, I found it a bit difficult. In Pompeii, I went to the bathroom and a man came out and flashed me and that kind of stuff. And as an 18-year-old, it kind of really scared me a little bit.
Yeah.
But I've never had any experiences like that for a long time since. And I think the place has really changed.
Mm. Yeah, and I remember my first trip to Italy when I was young. I wore a mini dress, and Italian women did not wear mini dresses.
No.
And it was like, you know, I literally stopped traffic. And I'm not really a traffic stopper, but the mini skirt did it for me. Mm. And the country is a lot more mellow these days, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a fantastically safe place to visit, I think. We're going to maybe talk about tips for travellers later, and there's maybe a couple of things that one has to be look out for. But I think it's a very safe place. I never feel threatened any at all these days at all.
Okay, so we know Sue's in love with the deep south. Mm-hmm. Tara, where's your favourite spot in Italy, or somewhere you're dying to go back to, or perhaps visit for the first time?
I loved Cinque Terre. I went there at the end of last year on a very spontaneous trip that I booked.
So this is coastal Italy?
Yes, yes, it is. And it's five towns that are along the rocky coastline. And basically you walk between the five towns. And each has a very distinct personality. So Rio Maggiore is very steep and rocky and beautiful coloured houses puncture the rock faces all along the coast. And then you have towns like Monte Rosso, which is a beach town, so full of the classic image of, you know, striped beach umbrellas and everyone tanning themselves. Then there's another town, Manarola, which again has a beautiful swimming alcove. But the idea is that you hike between the towns. So I was able to hike between three of the towns when I was there. It was glorious. It took about 20 kilometres and 25,000 steps out of me. And by the end, my quads were involuntarily shaking from all the steps. But it was well worth it. And yeah, I had double serve of gelato that day.
I was about to say, you stopped for gelato along the way, surely.
Yeah, there were plenty of food stops and fresh orange juice, squeezing shops along the way.
And had you planned this trip a long time in advance?
Not at all. Completely spontaneous. I booked it 20 hours before boarding the flight. Yes. my friend was getting married over there, which is as good an excuse as any to go. So I cleared my schedule. And Cinque Terre was an add-on to that. So yeah, you kind of just go there. I booked an apartment and explored and hiked and made the best out of Italian life. It's always a good idea to go to Italy.
You're very right there. And what about any places still on your must-see list that you haven't gotten to yet?
Yes, I'm very intrigued by Albero Bello.
Ah, in Puglia.
Yes, with the conical shaped houses.
This is a town with really distinctive architecture where the houses are all round and they've got these conical roofs.
Mm,
And it's a little bit touristy in the way that Venice is, because you just need to go there and see it. But
exactly.
Puglia is quite beautiful. It's also sort of further down towards the south, lots of olive trees, quite arid.
Mm.
It's got beautiful places like Lecce, which is a Baroque town made of this really warm rock, so it sort of seems to glow yellow in the sunlight. Or it's got lots of little, the Greeks were there as well, so it's got lots of little white hill towns which look like something you'd expect to see on Santorini, say, like Ostuni. So I think Puglia is a really good idea.
Add
that one to your list. Okay, so we're definitely feeling the Italy love. But there's downsides to every destination. Tara, anything pop into your head?
Over-tourism is a real issue in Italy, particularly plaguing Venice. But I see that Rome also has laid down some laws just last week saying that tourists must adhere to a certain level of etiquette, which involves...
And what they wear.
Yes,
I saw that.
Yeah. Which fortunately wasn't to do with female dress, but was to do with male dress and not having bare chests on show in Rome. Also not eating messy food on the street and also not dragging those wheeled suitcases across the cobblestone streets, which creates quite a racket. So that was interesting to see that they're trying to create a more positive experience, because unfortunately local populations do get frustrated with the amount of tourism and that leads to issues. So it's just advisable to approach things in a kind of low impact local way and, just avoid. You can go at different times to those iconic sites, or you can kind of do things differently, just walking around and exploring. And I mean, all the churches are glorious. It's not necessarily, of course, you need to see the big basilicas as well, but going to those smaller places can often be more rewarding and enjoyable.
And it's very much that thing in those big cities, as you say, you can choose your time, you can choose your neighbourhoods, but it's also, Italy is, I reckon, really pick any 20 square kilometres and you'll find somewhere. And one of my most memorable trips was in Umbria, which is sort of next to Tuscany. And there's little towns there like Mantova, there's Ferrara, not far away, there's Ravenna. And they're not really big tourist places, but they have this amazing history. They were rich places and they have art and architecture like no one's business. You know, Mantova is surrounded by lakes. It's a town surrounded by lakes, you know, and then you go in and some of the masters of Renaissance painting have decorated homes for their lords. And you can just look a little bit, pick a town. I say pick a town at random and read about it and I'm sure you'll find something worth going
Absolutely.
To visit.
Absolutely, yeah. It is just putting in that effort to go a little bit further out and explore places, which is one of the joys of travelling anyway. So,
And although I think the one downside for Italy for me is driving in Italy. I've always found that really hard work.
Yeah.
And if you're going to out-of-the-way places, sometimes you kind of have to rent a car and to go there. And you just have to take a really deep breath, I think, and just plunge into the traffic. And I've found that actually people behave quite well and they kind of avoid you if you look as if you don't know where you're going. I mean, I remember going round and round a roundabout in Pisa about six times and everyone kind of made way for me because they realised I was a stupid tourist and had no idea. And so I've always found that a little bit intimidating, the driving. But I actually think, you know, it's just like, say when you cross a road in Vietnam and it's really scary because everything's coming at you, but they just kind of part the way.
As long as you keep walking.
That's right. And it's the same, I think, in traffic in Italy. That's what they do for you as well.
Yeah, actually, last time I had to drive in Italy, last time I nailed it. And it was after a really scary start where I was driving down a freeway and, you know, when rain just comes down and it doesn't matter how fast your windscreen wipers are going, you can't actually see anything. And I had an Italian in the car next to me and I was going, I can't drive. I can't see. And she was like, stop. And I'm like, I'm on a freeway. She said, just stop. And so I went, okay. And I stopped and whacked on the hazard light. And, you know, everyone just drove around me because it was like, there's a car parked on the freeway. And this is the thing, that when you drive in Italy, you just watch the car in front of you and you assume they are going to do the stupidest thing possible at any given moment and you avoid them. And then the car behind you will do the same thing for you and they all manage to get through it, which is
No,
really,
that's a good plan, I think, really.
Yeah.
Just go how you can and, the world will stop for you. Really.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's great.
Okay, so let's wrap it up with some tips for travellers. Tara, what's your best piece of advice?
Go in off-season to certain places. I think Venice is magical in winter or in those off-seasons coming into spring, and you'll avoid the crowds that way. Of course, summer in Italy is also glorious, but you just have to decide. I think it warrants multiple trips back and forth. But, definitely going into off-season and walking everywhere and eating as much as possible.
big agreement on both of those.
Yes.
So they cancel each other out,
I guess. Exactly.
Yeah.
Sue, what about you? What's your best advice?
I think, Italy's cities are absolutely fantastic, but just always be aware of pickpockets, I think. And also there's sometimes little groups of adults and kids who congregate around bus stations and train stations. And they're often carrying big sheaths of cardboard. I don't know if you've encountered any of these groups. Every time I've been to Italy, I've encountered a different group. And they use the cardboard and they kind of push the cardboard. And they start talking to you in Italian, obviously. And they push the cardboard, well, it might not be Italian, it could be any language. They push the cardboard into your waist. And then they often go through your bags underneath the cardboard so you can't actually see what's happening.
Well, your attention is on them.
Well, that's right, because you don't really understand what's happening and you get really confused. And I've been caught a couple of times when, you know, my bag has been emptied really because of this trick. And every time I've been to Italy, I've seen these people. So it just, you know, it's been carrying on. It's a proud Italian tradition, I think, really. So, but the last time I went, I told my partner about this. It was his first time in Italy. And he said to me, oh, you know, I'll be aware of this. And I said, yes, try and be aware. And a group came towards us with the cardboard. Just, I think they just say, oh, Sue's coming to Italy. We're going to be ready for her.
I think you need to speak to your travel agent. He's clearly giving them your itinerary.
Yes, that's right. And they went to push the cardboard at us. And he shouted an obscenity at the top of his voice. And the people all just scurried away. And it really worked. Wow. And I thought, wow. I was actually quite shocked, but it really did the trick. So don't be afraid to shout at people if you think that there's something going on you don't like and you feel a bit uncomfortable. Mm. I mean, that doesn't happen to very many people. I think I've just been unfortunate a few times. I just look very gullible and I don't know. But yeah, so just be aware of pickpockets, really. But that's probably true for most big cities around Europe.
Mm. And particularly true if you have an innocent face like Sue does.
Yes.
And my tip is simply going to be just go, and when in doubt, it's more gelato. Well, thank you so much for joining us on a wonderful conversation about Italy. I'm about ready to book my next trip right now. Tara, thanks for coming in. Sue, thank you. If you'd like to read more travel stories by Sue or myself about Italy or about some other places that are almost as good, then visit traveller.com.au. And if you'd like to subscribe to Fly to Fancy, you can find us on iTunes or your favourite podcasting app. Don't forget to rate and review the podcast. We'll see you next time on Fly to Fancy.
Thanks for listening to this podcast, brought to you by Intrepid Travel. Sign up to the Intrepid e-newsletter for more travel inspiration and to be the first to hear about great deals and competitions. Visit intrepidtravel.com to subscribe today.
Fly to Fancy, the traveller.com.au podcast, is hosted by Ben Groundwater, produced by me, Annie Dang, recorded by Shannon Browning, and mixed by Lap Fam. Our digital editor is Craig Platt.